It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 411. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow, and also send me a friend request on Facebook. You can follow me there, facebook.com/MikeTechShow, and don't forget the Mike Tech Show Wiki at mtswiki.com. There you will find links to all of the archive shows going all the way back to show one. I have a jam-packed show tonight. The first quarter of the show or so, I'm going to be talking about Outlook and an incident and some things that I need some help, some problems that I'm going through with a client with interesting Outlook issues. And I have so many other things I wanted to talk about, but I also want to get to a big stack of your email responses and questions. So we're going to cover that. And I also want to follow up and close the loop on Outlook discussion that actually Outlook Express discussion that occurred in the post show last week with Kate. And I have some follow-ups on that. Before we get started, summer's coming, and that means many of us will be spending more time working from home or while we're traveling. So getting everyone together for a meeting, it's just an impossible task. But not if you have GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix. GoToMeeting lets you host meetings with clients and colleagues face-to-face and all while you're online no matter where you are. And with HD Faces, you just need a webcam to turn your online meetings into a group HD video conference. And attendees, they can join from any computer or device, whether it be an iPad, an iPhone, or an Android. It's so easy. The app is free and they can load it and join the meeting. Because you're listening to this show, you can try GoToMeeting with HD Faces free for 30 days. But you got to visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and enter the promo code PODCAST. There's one more thing. There's a special offer here. GoToMeeting is giving away 8 new iPads on Facebook. All you have to do is visit Facebook and like the GoToMeeting page. Then you can enter to win the new iPad. And you can refer a friend, and if they win an iPad, so do you. So check it out, like GoToMeeting on Facebook, and you can end up winning a new iPad. And I hope you win, and then don't forget to try GoToMeeting free today. I have a client who has literally PST files that add up to over 80 gig in size. He has hundreds of thousands of messages. He has been working on a very large startup for a very big software product. And this startup just requires so much communication with large presentations and attachments that his Outlook is he's really using it like a file manager. And it is the biggest Outlook size for email that I've ever worked on. Even in all my years in the corporate world and having mega boxes from executives, I've never seen anything like this. So I first made sure we had a good backup, of course, and we get a backup every night. And I did a safety backup of all of his PST files. He got an iPhone a couple months ago, and He did an initial sync with iTunes, but we've been having scheduling conflict with trying to get together to move him on to iCloud, because he really wanted to use and experience iCloud for synchronizing his calendar, his contacts. And I told him how much I love iCloud with my phone. Well, I've learned a few things. iCloud is not for everybody, and there are some issues. And these issues I did not run into, and I want to share them with you. I also ran into another problem when I was there on Sunday. We decided that he would like to go pop for his work email, and we still had pop for his Comcast personal email. But they were being forwarded and everything was together, and we want to keep everything separate. Made a separate PST, Comcast, you know, mail's coming in, no problem. But when I changed his company email, his corporate email, which is hosted by Google, so it's Google Apps in the background, so it's really just Gmail. When you first do that load for pop, everything comes down, and I forgot about that. So now, almost 10 gigs of email is now merged into his existing inbox, where we have several thousand messages are duplicated. I said, I have some ideas here on how I can unduplicate these and at least get rid of the dupes, but it's going to take a few hours. I don't have the time now because it was getting pretty late on Sunday night, and I had my son's graduation on Monday, so I decided that we're going to get together Wednesday night. So last night, we get together and start talking about some of his issues. Because now he's had a couple days to play when I got iCloud synchronizing. And it looked nice for the first few minutes while I was there on Sunday. But after he started to use his contacts and calendar within Outlook, the way he uses it, it's not different from everybody. It's just different from me and several of my clients. Give you an example. I'm going to talk to you about what the situation is and some of the problems. If someone sends him an invite and he accepts it, it goes to a default calendar. Unfortunately, iCloud has its own calendar, which it wants as the main, and that's fine, and that syncs beautifully. But Outlook, by default, when you accept a message, does not give you a choice as to which calendar to put it in. So he gets invites all the time with all kinds of GoToMeeting meetings, and they're coming from other people, or they're coming from people that work with him that are in other countries, and he accepts it, and it's not being synchronized. That's because it's going to a default calendar, not the iCloud calendar. This is a big issue, and I've learned this. I never ran into this, and I go to the Apple forums, and I'm seeing there are many, many people with this problem. So the workaround we decide is, once he knows he has a meeting like that, he has to go to the calendars where both of them are side by side, and he needs to drag and copy the meeting over to the iCloud calendar, and then it'll sync. Okay, so that's a workaround for problem one. Here's problem two. When he wants to create a new contact, by default, it's the same problem. You right-click, and let's say on an email address, and you say create a new contact. It creates it in a default contact that is empty because everything got transferred to iCloud. And now he has to do the same thing. He has to take that and drag it. Now, that's not such a big deal because that doesn't happen as often. So he has 1,500 contacts that are synchronizing beautifully with iCloud. So we can live with that little problem. But again, it's problem two. Now here's the big problem, and this is one I need you to A, weigh in on the two issues that I just mentioned, but the duplicate messages. I figured that if I exported all of the emails from the inbox to a PST and I select it, do not export duplicate messages, I thought that would take care of it. So now I would have a nice PST file that was not no duplicates. I have the file, then I delete it. Now remember, this is a big inbox, so this takes a long time. And I'm doing this remotely last night. I delete everything from the inbox, re-import, and guess what? All the duplicates are there. It really didn't do anything. So I thought I was clever and I was going to be able to get rid of the duplicates. I can't. So here's what I need. I need a recommendation. But I need a recommendation for a utility that you personally seen it work. You didn't read about it. I need to know that you worked with the utility and you were able to get rid of all of the duplicate messages. Even if I got to pay for this utility, I will. I mean, I would love it to be free, but if it's inexpensive or not that much money, I'll buy it just to solve this problem, which is to get rid of these several thousand duplicate messages out of this inbox. If anybody's got any kind, if you ran into something like this and you've used a utility that you know works and you can recommend to me, I will use it with my client. I will find a prize to give you that will make it worth your while. How's that? Okay. And then I will share that utility with everybody else after I've used it with my client and it worked. He's happy. I'm happy. I'm going to make you happy. And then I will share that with everybody with the link. That would be awesome if you can help me out there. I would really appreciate it. And I know my client would be very, very, very thankful. There are a couple other lessons that I learned here. One, and I didn't follow my own advice that I know I've given in a previous podcast. If you have multiple devices and you want to get your email and you want to make sure you don't miss any messages, your core system that has your main email client can be POP, but all other devices must be configured to IMAP. But what do you do when you have Comcast, which doesn't support IMAP? So that's an issue. We have no choice. We have to live with POP there. But because he does have Gmail, I first made his configuration on his iPhone POP. That was a disaster for those first couple days. I then made it go to IMAP, and then all of his problems went away. Winston Wolf in the chat had a great idea. It won't work for my client here, but it's a great suggestion, which is to take your Comcast email and forward it to a Gmail account, and then the Gmail account you can get via IMAP. Actually, I mean, I'm going to discuss that with my client, and that's actually a pretty good suggestion. That's great. That's how you know, that's a great way to handle the Comcast. I wish the duplicate emails we had something that was as easy. Let's see. Red in the chat has a link. And what I am going to do is I'm going to take a look at that after the show and I will get back to you and let's see if this works. Because what I'll do is probably create, that's okay, Red. Red hasn't used it, but let me know if you do recommend a utility and you haven't used it, because what I'm thinking of doing is creating a separate profile on my personal Outlook, deliberately duplicate messages to it, and then I have a test platform to try this utility before I would dare take it to a client and try it live. I'll probably do that with all of these suggestions and then see how that works and then go back to my client. Right now, he's sitting with just duplicate messages. We have the workaround for the iCloud calendar and contacts, and everything else is fine, and I'm so glad. And after 5 hours on Sunday and 5 hours last night, we finally came to where he was happy, because I know Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday morning were very stressful for him, because email is a mission-critical app, and things weren't working the way he needed, and I know it was ugly, and he suffered through a couple days, and then I fixed him up last night. Since we're talking about Outlook, Outlook Express, and here's why we want to discuss this. Kate has bought into the FABS Auto Backup, which I've been recommending, and I love it, and it's great. And she's been using this for clients, but she had a client where she took the Outlook Express And that's what they had, and they were going to move to Windows Live Mail. But after FAB's backup backed it up, it couldn't restore everything perfectly to Windows Live Mail. And when she went to import it from the backup that FABs did, it wouldn't import. That I was very surprised at. So she had to go back and manually copy. She still had the original drive and the original system, and she had to manually copy all the Outlook Express files and then was able to import them. So I said, why don't you post this on the FABs forum? Let the author know, because he's real good at getting back to you, and you know, we'll figure out what's going on. And the suggestion was, what they'll do if anybody has Outlook Express and they're moving from, like, let's say XP to Windows 7, they will convert them to Thunderbird first on the old system, and then just install Thunderbird on the new system, use FABs, it'll transfer everything. Now, that's a unique way of looking at the problem, which is just say, look, forget about Outlook Express, forget about Windows Live Mail, we're going to put you onto a better email client. I like that. That's thinking out of the box and trying to solve this problem. So I wanted to share all of those options with you in case you run into that situation. Now, it was also brought up, Kate asked me, Mike, I put together a checklist for properly backing up Outlook. Have I changed that since I now use FABs Auto Backup to back up? Now, there's a warning. And when you use the FABs Auto Backup utility, he clearly states it does not find all PST files. It'll go to the logical places that PSTs are supposed to be located, but it may not find every PST file. So it's your job to go in, and I always, no matter whether I'm using FABs Auto Backup or not, I will go in the control panel, I will click on the mail icon, I will look at the profiles, and I will see where all of the data files are located, and then I will make sure that FABs grab them. I have a different sort of modified checklist now that I just do a safety precaution, take a look at those options, and then make sure that I got all of the PST files that they are using. Because you don't know who set up the email client before you, and where they could have those PST files anywhere. Or they may not be PST. They may be OST. They could be offline folders. You got to make sure you're grabbing them all. And the only way to just double check your work, you don't just take the utility for granted. Yes, it's great. The utility backs up everything. But just in case, do a safety check. Go in and verify that all the PSTs and all the settings that you grab them. And then you know you have it. And I certainly would not blow away that system if hopefully you have that option where you're moving from one computer to another and it's not just reinstall on the same machine. Because if you are, grab an image of that so you can always get to the original files just in case. So make sure you have a traditional backup of that system if you're going to blow it away. And if you're not, well, just leave it alone. Keep it off to the side. You can always fire it back up and go in like Kate did for the Outlook Express. And she was able to go back to the original source directories and grab those files. Wanted to close the loop. And Kate, thank you very much for following up and sending me links to the forums so I could share that with everybody. Okay, this next question is from someone with the nickname Lone Star. And he has an Ubuntu problem. He's using Ubuntu 12.04. And he's excited about getting this work. But all of his previous versions have had no problem with his audio. Now, he's not getting any audio on his speakers. So we need to troubleshoot Ubuntu audio for 12.04. He's on a Dell 8100 XPS. It's an i5, 8 gigs of RAM. That's all awesome. And all running VirtualBox Linux distros. His Intel HD audio is the ICH6 family. And Ubuntu should run fine. he's having troubles. So what could we recommend so he can troubleshoot? Are there some good utilities out there? Because this is beyond me in troubleshooting an audio problem with Ubuntu. It would be great if you could send some suggestions on troubleshooting audio with the Ubuntu 12.04. I would appreciate that, and then I will share it with Lone Star. Thank you. This is from Michael, and it's in response to my show 409 that I had a problem with a client and them not listening to me on a network design rollout. Mike, listening to show 409 and the client not following your plan of action to solve the problem. In these situations, we charge a higher on-site rate for situations that are not standard because they don't follow a methodology that makes sense. If they follow our plan, we will use our lower rate that we give our managed clients. This usually will get them to switch, and if they don't, you will get paid extra for the extra time that it takes away from other customers and work you may have to sub out due to the time that it will take you to fix the network. Hope this helps. And Michael is the president of a consulting company in South Florida. Michael, what a great idea. And I will give that very, very strong consideration for this client. That's a great idea. Thank you. This is from Jason. One of your recent shows, you mentioned a new client checklist. I have started a new client checklist, but I would be interested to see what's on yours or for you to share with what's on yours to see what you have and maybe help us listeners out. I have signed up several new contract clients and would be interested in hearing your steps in cleaning up someone else's mess before you. Where do you start and what's next? Thanks for the info and keep up the great work. You're going to love this. I did a search before the show and show 369. I have a PDF and I dedicated a whole show to this on a client checklist. And there's even a PDF for you to download. I'm going to just quickly highlight it. I go over the consulting agreement and all the sections. Passwords, oh my. One of the biggest things when you walk in to take over a new client is collecting and gathering all the passwords from all the different administrative passwords and firewalls and VPN devices. Maybe there's software passwords, switches, phone systems. There's so much, and I have a list here. Hardware inventory, workstations, servers, switches, firewalls, network appliances, printers. Then, gathering all the maintenance and support contracts. Gather detailed information on all the systems, and I review how to do that. Make sure you set up remote access to everything you need remote access to. Then, what are existing problems that the client is experiencing? Make sure you carefully document that because those pain points are what you want to attack first in your priority list. So listen to your client. Listen to when they talk about all the problems that they're having and make sure you address them. Then I have examine all the logs for all the devices. Review all the data collected and produce an initial report with recommendations. Meet with the client to review the report and prioritize all of your recommended actions based on the report. So I went pretty thorough there on what to do for a new client, and this is a great checklist for you. So I'm glad that you've found the show and you have that question because that's the perfect show for you to listen. And I'll have a link to show 369 in show 411 here, show notes. Roy sent me two articles from The Consumerist where someone bought a laptop from Newegg. They reinstalled a different operating system on the laptop. They put Linux on the laptop. Then right away discovered some serious hardware problems that had nothing to do with the operating system. but they returned the operating, they returned it with the Linux operating system. Newegg, by default, rejected the RMA and sent it back. Because this got some press and some attention, Newegg has since made them an offer for a full refund or a new machine. Now, that's great. Newegg stepped up. I will say this, though. It's a tough call because you've modified, and what Newegg is saying, you voided the warranty by changing the initial operating system. Now, we all know you could put a different operating system on it. Let's say you got Windows Home Premium and you decide to go to Windows Ultimate, Windows 7 Ultimate. Here's what I recommend, just in case you run into this situation. If you're going to do that, grab an image of the initial, the way it was delivered. Get a full system image and put that away. Then, if you're ever in this situation, and this is why I'm bringing it up, I'm sure it's not just Newegg. I'm sure anybody out there, manufacturer, anybody who's reselling, may have the same policy. If you're playing with a different operating system and you run into a serious problem where you got to return it, you can then at least re-image it back to the factory default, the way it came in. Still have the same hardware problem, but at least they will honor the warranty. I think that's the message here. I can't hold them really at fault for not wanting to not work on that. Hey, they shipped it a certain way. You've modified it. Although it doesn't sound fair, take that extra step to protect yourself. So this way, if anything does happen, you can return it the way you received it. Roy, thank you for the two links. It's very interesting reading, and I will have them in the show notes. And this is Ron Homer, who's a regular listener, also normally in the chat. He's not here tonight. He has an Adobe Flash issue. I noticed this update, and I didn't apply it, so I'm kind of glad I didn't. Do you know of any issue with the Adobe Flash Player 11.3.300.257 update? It seems to work fine with Chrome and IE, but not Firefox. When I try to go to any video websites, it won't load any videos when I use Firefox. I'll tell you, I have had it up to here with Firefox. As a matter of fact, I'm doing the show tonight for the first time on Ustream. I'm using Safari. Firefox kept crashing every time. And what is it with every week a different version number? They're up to version 13. You know, I used to like Firefox. I used to love it and use it for the extensions. I've really had it, and I'm about ready to totally abandon Firefox because of all of the issues. It sucks the life out of my CPU, and this used to be months of, you know, versions a long time ago. It did that. Then they got better. Now they've went off the cliff. And you know what? Bye-bye, Firefox. I've had enough. You know, you've caused enough grief in my life that it's time to move on to another browser. I'm willing to embrace IE9. That's how bad I hate Firefox right now. I am now off my my soapbox for the night. Let's continue. This is Jeff. Hi, Mike. Listen to the show regularly and love it. I need help organizing photo files, JPEGs, PNG, etc. on my PC. I've got a rather old stationary PC with both Windows and Linux, as well as a laptop with Windows. Unfortunately, each machine has loads of photos from various periods of time, mostly of family, vacations, and work-related events. They are organized in folders with names such as Grand Canyon, Spring 2010, etc. Each of the folders spread about the three machines in no clear and logical order. There are scores and scores of these folders, and literally thousands of photos, which I want to tag and organize in some logical fashion. What I want to do is, one, identify each folder with photos, JPEGs, PNG, etc. And then, two, back them up to my 1 terabyte external hard drive. I will then start the laborious job of tagging and organizing each photo. Note that I want the original folders to be included in the backup to the external drive, as they contain the photo topics such as Grand Canyon Spring 2010. Simply doing a search in Explorer for all photos on CND drives will identify and give me a list of all photos, but I don't get the folders included in the search results. Any ideas or suggestions on how I might do this? Thank you. Regards, Jeff Baker. Jeff, if you go to a Mac iPhoto and import all of them, boy, it really does organize them better. All right, enough of the Mac. Picasa will help you. Take a look at Picasa and see if that will go through, that will actually go through and ferret out all of the drives and folders and at least give you a mechanism to be able to coordinate and start searching and start tagging and start organizing. I have a utility that I know I've recommended, and I'll find it, that will enable you to bulk tag an entire folder. So it will also help you bulk rename photos. So taking advantage of using Picasa and using some utilities that can do some bulk rename, then, as a matter of fact, I'm being corrected. Winston says Picasa will actually do that too. I didn't know that. I think that will be a good starting point for you in getting a handle on all this. Give that a try. Picasa's free. It's made by Google. And there's just a ton of people just love that. Love it to death. Let me know how you make out. Look for those links in the show notes. This is Javier. I recently bought Nero 11 video editor for XP. I edited my video. As a result, the render out option of Nero kept crashing. I ended up trying to email or contact Nero for a refund, and there was no response. I tried calling them, and it seemed that for tech support, I would have to pay them by the minute. When it comes to customer service, Nero software stinks. So my message is basically, how can you trust a software really nowadays, since so many developers put software out? If you want a refund or tech support, you must really research the company before purchasing. This really hurts businesses, though, because sometimes we are under the gun for time and we need to get a product out. In the past, some software I thought I was getting assistance from California and ended up with phone operators with really heavy accents from India. It made my troubleshooting near impossible. I wish there was a site where I could go where I know that all the software on that site has been evaluated and tested for malware and other issues, and the software, actually there are, you know, FileHippo and some other places, you know, there are some trusted places. Anyway, just letting you know about what I thought was a legit company ended up being a bucket full of stress. Thanks for the email. And I guess, you know, even when you do the research, how do you trust the reviews? How do you know that it's not a company out there paying for reviews and having people do the reviews for them? It's like, you know, restaurant reviews on Yelp. Can you really trust them all? And I've said this before. You throw out the real overly good reviews and you throw out the horrible, horrible reviews, and the truth lies somewhere in the middle. You throw out the two top, the two bottom, and then take a look at what's left. And I think therein lies the truth in reviews. Does that help us? Where do we get reviews for something as specific as the Nero video editor? I don't know. And before you shell out all that money, it does. It really stinks. If anybody has some suggestions for what's a good process, you know, before you invest money. When it comes to enterprise software, well, what would we do? We would, you know, if it was a big investment, I would want to talk to people that are like me in my field that are using that software and actually talk to them for as references. When you come to an inexpensive software like this, you can't do that. I guess the bigger the software, the easier it is to find reviews and then get not only the reviews, but really you're looking for qualified references that you can call and check. I don't have a clear-cut answer for you except for my rambling that I've just done. So I don't know if that's going to help you, but if anybody's got some input on this, I'd love to hear it, and I will share it with everybody. This is from TechWorks, and he says, "Hi, Mike. I'm a big fan and hope you can help me. How's that for sucking up? Anyway, I've got a problem with Virtual XP on Windows 7 laptop, and I posted about it on the Computer Tech Pros news group. Somebody said they thought that you had dealt with this very issue very recently. Here's the post. Hi, all. Got a Windows 7 workstation on which I've set up XP mode to run a legacy application. The legacy application needs to print to a network printer on the LAN and get onto the internet. I've set the NIC on the virtual machine to use the same Wi-Fi connection that the main Windows 7 machine is using. Both the Windows 7 machine and the virtual machine get assigned appropriate IP info from the DHCP server. Problem is, the virtual machine can't get out on the internet. I can ping the gateway IP from the virtual machine. I can ping the Win7 IP from the virtual machine, and I can ping the virtual machine and machine too. But the virtual machine cannot get out to the LAN. Pinging anything else from the virtual machine fails, and of course, I can't ping the web pages, both of which are required. I've turned off the firewall on both machines, but still no luck. Now, strangely, I'd swear I've done this at other locations and it worked fine. And I'm trying to do something that won't work. Anyway, that's it. Sound familiar?" It sounds a little familiar. Here's what I was dealing with. It was Windows XP on Parallels on an iMac. And I had the exact same issue that you're having, but from XP on an iMac. I ripped out Parallels and I put VMware Fusion, and that solved my problem. I tried everything. Here's what you need to do. Go try like VirtualBox or something else rather than the XP mode. Try something else and reinstalling the guest operating system. I have no other solution, but that's what I did. I tried reinstalling Parallels and that didn't even help me. Like just going to VMware Fusion, it was a whole different way that it approached using the virtual NIC, and that solved my problem. It's not an elegant solution for you, but VirtualBox is free, and this may give you another virtualization to try over the XP mode and see what happens. The only other thing I can suggest is just redoing the XP mode from scratch and just rebuild it. And that may fix the problem. I know that's not a great solution for you, but I think that's what the person who was referencing that post heard me talk about. And unfortunately, I didn't have an easy answer. Hopefully, you might be able to get this working, you know, just using a different virtual option. This is from Al, and this is interesting open source feature. Hi, Mike. Just a quick one that may or may not interest you. One of the co-hosts of one of my favorite podcasts has done a really interesting thing, and I wondered, would you maybe you could mention it? Brian Lunduk, co-host of the Linux Action Show over on Juniper Broadcasting, is a massive Linux and open source guy and is also a developer. He has an application called Illumination Software Creator that allows users to create Android, iOS, HTML5, and other platform applications visually. After reaching a level of funding, he has open sourced the code and made the software and his other content, including games and comics, totally free under the GPL3. Maybe you would encourage some donations or a worthwhile project. I made on a Google Plus post about this, and I recommend it. You check out the project, and the project is lunduke.com. even Microsoft are starting to embrace open source and open standards and opening up the door to Linux. And he has a link. Many thanks, and I understand this is off topic, and not really, but for your target audience. We've been talking about open source for a long time, and I love supporting open source projects. There's many that I use. You know, I love Untangle and Fog, and there's lots of great projects out there. Check it out, and I will have this link in the show notes. Wilfred, hello, Mike. This is my first time to write to you and love your podcast. Keep it up. I came across some interesting software in the area of NVR for security IP camera management. The company name is Logiware, and Geo1984 is the CMS. Found a review on CNET and was helpful, but little else on the net. I'm wondering, in a school in Manila, Philippines, that on a tight budget, and this software seems to be in our price range. The software has unlimited camera connect, now in version 3.8, has been around for some years, but not very well known. My question to you and your listeners, has anyone used it? And what have you done with regards to IP cameras, video surveillance, managing software in your business? Thanks for giving me a little of your time. This is a great question. And if anybody has any information on this, Logiware and the Go 1984, let me know, because I have not worked at all with any camera surveillance or camera management IP cameras. The most I've done is a client in Center City, Philadelphia, that they are hairstylist, I guess a hair salon, and they have cameras all over the store. And that was just an install of a bunch of cameras, and they wanted to be able to view them from outside the company. So I had to make sure that the port forwarding and all the ports were set up. So from a network infrastructure standpoint, I was able to just read the manual and see that they used port 80, and that I made sure port 80 was forwarded to the right place so he could use a browser from the outside and he could view the cameras and log in to the software. If anybody has any suggestions or any feedback, that would be great. I would appreciate it. This is, let's see, dear Mike, first of all, I want to thank you for doing a wonderful podcast. I eagerly wait for new episodes that you post. Regarding the transfer of files to iPad or iPhone, you had mentioned GoodReader. I have used two other programs that works great and very easy to operate. I am sure that no instructions will be required for anyone to use it, plus they are both free. One of these has a password protection as well, and the one is portable hard drive. You can choose your port number if you want. Set up a password to access the server, and there is even a session timeout option. The next one is called Wi-Fi Share. This is really simple and easy to use. Thanks, and keep up the good work. Naven, thank you so much for this email, but he didn't provide me the links to the apps. Now, I'll search them and put the links in the show notes. If you recommend something, you will save me an incredible amount of time if you provide me the links to the software or to the programs or to the company that you're mentioning. If you put the link in the email, it makes it so much easier for me to just cut and paste and build my show notes. I really appreciate it. I'll find them and I will put them in the list. Hi, Mike. I'm just listening to your latest show, and I heard you mention an iOS app for an iPad to transfer files back and forth to the desktop. There is a free Android app that does that and more, and it's Arnoid works wonderfully for this. Just another option, and I thought you might want to know about for your Android customers and listeners. And this is enjoying each and every show, and this is Bruce near Pittsburgh. Thank you very much, Bruce. And again, I'll find the link and then put it into the show notes. This is from Winston Wolf, and he often sends me some of his favorite links that he finds in Lifehacker and some other places. And this is OS X Windows Management. So I will include that in the show notes. Thank you, Winston. This is from Hilton, and he recommends Hiram's Boot CD. He hasn't heard me mention that. It's been a long time, but in my tool bag, I carry a copy of Hiram's Boot CD, which has great utilities on it. Hilton, thank you very much for that. That was the last question. I do not have any music for tonight for the show. First, I want to thank everybody for using my Amazon link. You're doing an incredible job. It has been awesome, and I thank you so much. To use my link to support the show, it's amazon.mikenation.net, miketechshow.com/Amazon. The Amazon link is right on the left-hand side of the website. Everything you buy when you click that link, the proceeds go to support the show, and it helps. It really does. You've been doing a phenomenal job in sharing that link and buying from Amazon, using it. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. That's it. I will talk to you next week. Same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.